Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. God bless you. May the light spread all over this world, bringing peace, joy, inward attunement, with the highest thought and power behind all creation. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Sent out a posting this morning I thought that I would read from, entitled Divine Communion. A transliteration of Matthew 12:48-50. Who is my mother, brother, or sister? Those who are actively attuned to my Heavenly Father, pure spirit, beyond time and space, beyond personhood, those are my spiritual family, which supersedes all other relationships. Jesus was making an important point to those around him. Even the special bond of an eldest son to a mother is secondary to the spiritual communion in God. I watch as the nearly full moon descends into the western sky. It is a September harvest moon. And in its radiance, I feel an even greater afterglow from yesterday's equinoctial group meditation. What glory there is in divine communion, not only with our Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, but also with all brothers and sisters coming together in spirit as well. This superior union in spirit connects us all and is greater than the bonds of blood, greater than friendships based on common worldly interest, for it goes to the innermost core of the Atman, or soul, my part of God. The Infinite Lord has been teaching me over these many years the nature of this spiritual bond. When I sat at the feet of Swami Satchidananda, he said at the time of my departure, after spending 4 months at the ashram, "Whenever you think of the ashram, you will be here." I had some notion of what he was saying, but really I had only touched the surface of those deep waters to which he was alluding. Through deepening experience, new ways of connecting with not only the ashram and Swamiji, but with all God's creation began to reveal themselves to me. Truly, I could think of Swamiji halfway around the world, and I did feel I was with him. This form of connection is different than a psychic connection in which I know something about someone else through intuition. I asked God to take that away from me because I could feel its allure to my ego sense. No, this connection happens in a divine field. In knowing God experience, I also commune with whatever God reveals about different ones he brings to mind. In this field, there is no ego allure, but a deep feeling of compassionate, loving spirit. Information coming from this inner communion varies according to divine will, from specific information to a general sense of being, from past life influences to what may occur in coming times. No curiosity or delving into more than what is given is triggered by such inner communion, but a very simple trust that whatever comes to me is what is needed in the moment. Physical proximity is not a requirement. Spirit is a time and space annihilator, for communing through spirit operates through a substratum present in all creation. In spirit, everything exists equally, without distinction of high or low, and the many opposites that occupy material relationships. Really, when it comes to it, there really is no such thing as brother or sister, mother or father. There is only one being who is perfect, pure, and all-pervading. All expressions are of this one spirit. Therefore, I am really only knowing something about myself, for there is no other. As we sit in meditation on this powerful equinox inwardly communing with infinite spirit, various disturbances that others are experiencing effortlessly come to my awareness, for I feel no difference between the various parts of God. Physical discomfort, emotional pain or blockages, and restless thoughts all dance across my mental screen. And what do I do with these? I pass them on to the feet of God. I surrender them to Him. It may be something from those sitting in the room with me. It may be from those who are at a great physical distance. In spirit, it makes no difference. There are times when the pain or disturbance is excruciating, but it is all God, and therefore it is all good. It is all about surrender to the light, letting go of all that keeps us from knowing our oneness with God or pure spirit. And this is why, on both a human and spiritual level, kinship in spirit is of superior value. Spiritual relationship is geared towards mutual advancement in God awareness. Other relationships can also be important, but they cannot match the highest common good, which is derived from communion through infinite spirit. And from the Bible, "Who is my mother, and who are my brethren?" And he stretched out his hand towards his disciples and said, "Behold my mother and my brethren, for whosoever shall do the will of my Father, which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother." Isn't that beautiful? Reading from Cross and Lotus Journal from this last September. Mother speaking. This love of God contains all love, all things, if we would but know it. And so this personal glory, this intense desire to identify with something other than God, is not necessary. But you cannot accomplish this overnight. Gradually, one by one, these shackles fall away from you, and there is nothing left but God and Guru. And yet, contained within those, one who is unmanifest and the other manifest, you will find your togetherness, your love, your security, your peace, your satisfaction. Everything that you want is contained in that. And you find no sense of separation. The sin of separation from God gradually leaves you as you go up this path, the way of the cross, until finally the total ego is crucified. Not only the gross ego, the ego of the physical senses, but the ego of the mind, that subtle ego in which all of the five senses have their roots. And more as you repeat the name of God, as you give thanks to Him, and what greater way is there to go to God than to constantly give thanks to Him for all of your blessings? Father, I thank Thee that my good already exists for me. Father, I thank Thee that my good already exists for me. There is a way of prayer to go into your secret closet and to seal it very tight. I once wrote a poem for my son, which I have given to you, but I'll say it again because I think it was a wonderful thing that God gave me for him, and it can apply to every single one. In my heart is a constant prayer for you that murmurs like a haunting refrain. It is filled with love and knowledge true that God's wisdom you will gain. I see in the mirror of my mind the reflection of your soul. I see its exquisite beauty and its color of purest gold. I see God standing close to you, holding out his hand, just waiting for you to tell him you are his, but to command. Enter into his temple, seal it very tight. Forget the things of time and space. Be one with his infinite light. If each one of us were to do this and to give thanks for the privilege of daily praying to God, He will give us our daily bread, which is the manna from heaven. He will give us the physical bread which we need and the clothes that we need to wear and all of the good things of the earth and of heaven. You see, God directs us, even the birds and the animals, to whatever we need, whenever we need it, if we would but have faith in Him. It is a tremendous thing. But one thing I would say to you, and that is no matter what plate, what meat God sets before you, eat it with joy and thanksgiving. Whether your plate be filled with the choicest morsels or whether you have but a crust of bread and a drink of water, thank God for it and bless Him. He who needs no blessings. But it is a wonderful to give thanks because as you give thanks, your blessings multiply. Know that this is your Father has provided for you and that this is what you have earned for today. And know that whenever you go, wherever you go, that your body is the church, your church, and Christ is the head of it. So wherever you go, you take your church with you, and you may worship Him wherever you are. And God provides the meat for that day. Accept it, no matter what it is, because that is the food which He wishes you to have. The sense of perfect submission to God in all things is not a giving up on life or that you have any wish or desire for anything more in life. God is constantly expressing Himself as this universe. Mother described the sound of Om, and it's spelled A-U-M. And in the little story that she told, when God was, He was just simply in Himself, pure and existent. And then He thought to Himself, I wish to express myself. And so He breathed out the ah, the A sound. And He breathed out ah. And all creations came into being and all of its potentiality. And He saw that it was good. And so then He breathed out the letter U, U. And ooh, and He preserved what it was that He had created. And at some point, as the creation was going along, He decided to withdraw back into Himself. And so He issued out the sound of the M, and withdrew all creation back into Himself. And it is all one spirit, it is all one being. And yet, as it goes out, and as it returns back to Himself, He seems to oppose Himself. And so this explains the dual nature of life. If you go to see a play or a movie or read a book, you will find that inevitably there is somebody who is the oppositional force, somebody who has to be struggled against, fought against. This is what makes it a story. Otherwise, we would soon quickly get bored with it. And so in life, too, we have those who come into our lives to play the oppositional force. And what gets us caught up into the drama, what gets us caught up into the ego sense of things, is when we personalize it. But just imagine whatever oppositional force you may have or may have had in your life. Maybe something's happened to you in the past, and it seems to hang on to you, and you hang on to it. And just imagine that that oppositional force, instead of seeing it as somebody who did something very terrible, very wrong, and they may have. But see that that was God, come in that form. And you would think, why in the world would God put me through such terrible experiences? And yet I have seen with my own experience that everything that we go through in this lifetime, we have earned, as Mother said in this writing. There is something that we have done, and it has boomeranged back on us. And it may be into the long, distant past. And you think, well, why can't I remember previous incarnations if I had them? But let me ask you, how much do you remember of the first 7 years of your life or the first 10 years of your life? You have fragments here and there. I can remember just a fragment of looking out from my crib and seeing what appeared to be bars going up. I was in a little baby prison and in this bed, but it was there to keep me safe, so I couldn't get out, but I remember wanting to get out. And so you have these fragment memories, perhaps, but so much of it. Perhaps you're reminded by pictures or other things, but it's just little fragments here and there. And then you go further back. You go, well, what do I remember of my first year? Of my first month in this body? It was fairly dramatic time of us coming back into this body. Yet we have very little memory of any of that. In deepened meditation, sometimes these spontaneous memories come to you. And you just remember. I remember being in my mother's womb, and I could hear her heartbeat, and I felt comfortable, and I was warm, and everything was fine in there. And somehow I had some knowledge of what this life was to bring. And there were going to be unpleasant parts to it, and I really didn't want to do it. And I felt like that I really didn't want to be born into this world. And my mother told me later on that I was breech-born and that the doctor was far up into his elbows getting me turned around, and so that I could get turned around in the right direction and come out. I could just imagine myself putting myself in that breech position, not wanting to come out. But out I came, fortunately for my mother and fortunately for me. Because even though there were difficult times, there is also wonderful times. There is a wonderful opportunity. And each one of us in life has a great opportunity, an opportunity to grow, to learn. We come into this life with positive and negatives. There are prodigies who are born into this world, children who know how to play a piano or instrument or can do fantastic math at a very early age. And there's no explaining where this knowledge came from. Unless you realize that this is earned knowledge from previous lifetimes. Now, all of us have certain aptitudes coming into this life. Oftentimes, we take it for granted because it's always there. But we look around and we see somebody else who doesn't have social skills, or they don't have ability to learn certain things. Things that come easily for us. And we think, well, why do I have that ability and this other person doesn't? And the reason is because it's a carryover from things that we have done in other lifetimes. And at different ages, different things get triggered due to the development of our body and our brain. And as a result of that, we get both gifts and we get those things that create challenges for us. People are born into this life and they have a propensity towards addiction. So they're born into a family where addiction is prevalent. And so they're tested with that. And they have choices. And we all make choices. I remember somebody saying that the first time they tried drugs and they came from a family where addiction was prevalent. And it tasted too good. It felt too good. And they said, I can never do this again. Because they felt the temptation in it. But not everybody makes that choice. Some people just dive in head deep. And so it goes and it creates the problem all over again. We keep coming back again and again and again to face those things that give us difficulty. And we're here to face them. That's part of what we're about, because there are things that occur here on this earthly plane that occur nowhere else. You think, well, I just like to stay in the astral planes and resolve all these things, or the higher planes. But it doesn't happen in the same way there. And so because it's an unresolved thing for you, it's something you have to come back for. And we keep coming back to it until we get it, until we learn the lesson. Until we free ourselves from whatever it is that we're struggling with. So this is, life is a call to action. a call to grow, to learn from our experience, not to keep repeating the same things again and again, so that we have to be drawn back into a body again. We can have all the excuses in the world. Well, my early life was like this, or I didn't have a chance, or what society has done to me, and all the rest of it. And it doesn't hold any water. There may be some truth to it. But the responsibility is ours, and we must take it. And we must make of this life what we will. There's very interesting new studies going on around genetics. And genetics is a fairly recent study, and they've done the genome where they've discovered all the different possible combinations of genes. But it's a very, very complicated picture. Very difficult to anticipate what a child, for instance, is going to have as a combination of the two parents, and then going back further in generations. Very complex. But what they thought at one time was that genes were predeterministic, that they would explode within your system and you are stuck with them. But it turns out that genes are much more pliable than originally thought. Genes can be turned on and turned off. And your thoughts, your behavior, all of that goes into determining which of those genes are going to become dominant. So we're not just simple victims of what we've been handed. It's true. We may have certain things that we have to deal with that other people may not. Master used to go to astrologers, and he would say, all right, predict my worst times, predict my worst days. They would tell him, oh, don't start a certain project on this day because the stars aren't aligned for it. And Master would say, true enough, I would have extraordinary difficulties during that time, but I was determined that that will inside of me, my personal will combined with God's will, was more powerful than the stars. And even though I encountered extraordinary difficulties, I would accomplish what I set out to do. And so he had this tremendous will, and Mother had that kind of will as well. We determine where direction our life takes, what our values are, what we choose to do and not choose to do. All of that, we don't control many, many things of the world around us. But we choose our own attitude. And as the old saying says, attitude determines altitude. So if your attitude is low, you can tell where the rest of you is going. So it's vastly important that we make a decision. And the most important decision that we can make in life is, what am I going to do with my life? What's the purpose behind my life? Now, for some of us, that purpose gets revealed. We can't avoid it. It seems that God is orchestrating. This is the way it was with me. And really, if I had my own personal choice, I wouldn't have chosen a spiritual life in the beginning. It chose me. Now, perhaps I chose it at an earlier time, and that's why it chose me. But I was ready, and God was calling to me, and He would not let go, and I wanted Him to let go. He was making my life miserable. He put me into a spiritual crisis, and I didn't want it. And yet there it was, and I stuck with it. And what I once thought was a curse, I now think of as the greatest blessing in my life. Isn't that interesting? And many of us can look back over our lives and say the very things that bothered us the most turned out to be one of the greatest blessings in our lives. So this is true. This is true. And to begin to see the blessing, this is begin to see, be thankful for everything that occurs in your life, is that you may not realize it in the moment, but this can turn into a great blessing. Those things that challenge you, those people who don't treat you well, and they are challenging you to rise up, to be strong, to draw upon the strength of God inside of you, not to be dominated by another person, not to have them influence you in a negative way, but for you to be strong in God, strong in the light. This is a tremendous thing. I had a father. He was a good father in many, many ways. And I don't want to deride him in any way, but he could also be a tough customer. And he demanded a lot. And he's a powerful personality. And it made me stronger. It made me more grounded in the world. And this was important for me. I remember when Mother would walk into the room. And she walked with such a firm tread. Clop, 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 clop. Not lightly on the floor. She was all present, all accounted for. Every part of her was there. And if you were doing a project for her, you'd better measure up. You'd better do it exactingly. Or she would find fault with it, and then she would start to correct you. She taught me an important lesson one time. I refurnished all of her furniture. She had a dresser that she had used, and she had told about one night with this dresser. She had a man come to her for what she called an interview. She would talk with people. And in that interview, this man revealed that he had been a Nazi war criminal. He committed many terrible crimes, and he was carrying the burden of that. And it weighed him down. It wasn't that he was a bad sort. He was just caught up in a situation. And he did things that he wasn't proud of, that he felt very sorry for. And in Mother talking to him, there are many dark astral forces that were all around him that were left over from this period. And when he left, Mother apparently, willingly or not, as according to God's will, took on those astral forces. And they were hanging all around her. And she could feel them. And she could see them. And so she lit some incense, because incense, when it's properly made, will exude a fragrance not only in the physical realm, but in the astral realm too. And that's why it can be a good cleanser, especially if you're being bothered in the psychic or the astral realm. And so she lit this incense, and it's on her dresser top. And it burned down within a very, very short amount of time, which showed that something extraordinary was going on. And it burned down to the point where it caught fire on her dresser top, if you can imagine such a thing from just a little incense stick. But she was dealing with these terrible astral forces, and she had to work through it all over time, but it left this burn mark on top of her dresser. And so I took the couple of dressers and the end tables and everything, nightstands, everything, and went to refinish it. So I painted all of the furniture, and it had little fine gold filigree all around it. So I used a gold paint on top of the other paint, and it was slow going. I had to go over it and over it and over it, because it wouldn't cover in one coat or two or three or four. So over and over it went. And there was a place or two. It looked good overall, unless you looked very closely. There was a place or two that I wasn't completely happy with. So I was bringing the furniture back, and Mother was looking at it, and she was just all aglow with appreciation. And then I made a mistake. I said, well, except for this one little spot here that I wasn't happy with and just wasn't able to correct it. Suddenly she's down on her hands and knees, and she's looking the whole thing over inch by inch. Oh yes, and here's another one here, she says, one place I hadn't even noticed before. So it taught me that if somebody is happy with something, don't point out all the problems with it. Let them enjoy it, and they'll probably never see it. But anyway, Mother was like that. But she was all on the ground. She was a full force to be reckoned with on every level. And if somebody came at her and challenged her, she'd come right back at them. Not in a mean way and not in a bad way. She would just meet them force for force. And she was perfectly balanced in every way. She is so totally spiritual. And she was a human being. And this is something that she would make a point with us. When Mother Krishnabai wrote dictated her autobiography to Swami Satchidananda, she said, "I want you to write everything I say, because I want people to have a realistic notion of what it is to be God realized." She said, "I write differently. I say it differently than Papa does." And Mother was like that too. She was going to lay the whole thing out. There were so many things that had happened to her that she had never heard about. And she wanted us to know, if these things occur in your sadhana, in your spiritual practice, now you know they are part and parcel of your spiritual path. You will be hung up like on a cross, only it will be the cross of your body, not a wooden cross. It will be as if you were nailed to that cross. And you will have two thieves, one on each side, and one's good and wanting to go up to heaven, and the other one is derisive and wanting to take you back down. And both will be speaking to you. And you will have to decide which one you go with. Now, in the story of the Christ, he clearly chose the good thief and said, "You will be with me in heaven today." But the other thief, not so much so. And so he is showing us the pattern. He is showing us what we must do. But it's not always easy, because these temptations come to us. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a temptation if it's something that didn't bother us, if it's something that couldn't find any purchase on us. We wouldn't pay any attention to it. It'd just be a breeze. But it's the very things that we're attached to. It's the very things that perhaps we swore at one time we would never do. And here God is taking us right into the lion's den. And in we go. Perfect faith. Perfect knowledge that God will provide for us whatever it is that's needed. I remember when God took me into this nothingness. And when I mean nothingness, I still existed in a body. I was still operating in a sense. But inwardly, I didn't feel anything. I felt completely void of any feelings, of any desires, nothing. And I just seemed to keep on running my life because out of habit, but not because of any real intention or desire on my part. I didn't have it. And one time, somebody who was very close to me at the time says, "I feel like you're not here, ever." And I turned and I said, without any thinking on my part at all, it just came out of me, "I am dead." And I was. It was the nothingness. The nothingness of God, and it's a state that we go through at a certain time during this mystical crucifixion. And everything was taken from me, all the familiar things, home and family and everything that I had hung my hat on. He took away profession. God took away absolutely everything. And I had nothing left to hang my hat on, so to speak, in this world. That God alone was my sole reality. And I remember walking up a hill one time. And as I was making my way up that hill, suddenly all my life energy just left me. It's like a syringe drew it out. But it wasn't a blissful experience. It was just a nothing experience. I had no life energy at all. I couldn't take another step. And it was so clear to me what Jesus had said, that he said, "I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works." And through these experiences, he taught me on deeper and deeper levels the absolute truth of that. And that ultimately we come to realize, I of myself am nothing. I have nothing. There is a story in India that is told of the property manager. And the property manager was managing the large mansion and all the properties for this wealthy individual who was absent at the time. And the property manager kind of came to think that all of this was his. And so he took a great deal of pride in that. And then one day, the owner returned home, and he had decided to make some changes, and he let the property manager go. And just like that, he was asked to leave. And he didn't have a stick of furniture, he didn't have a house, he didn't have anything. He had no servants, nothing. And he left a complete pauper, just like that. And this is the way it is with us in the world. Whatever it is that we have or that we think that we have, it's all God's. And at any moment, he can take it all away. And ultimately, death is that complete partition between what we think of as life. And everything that we thought that we owned, even this body, it's gone. It's all gone. And who are we then? What have we realized about that? And the thing is this is the time to realize who and what we really are. Not at the time of death. There's nothing magic about death. Other than we leave this body. And we're able to see things sometimes more clearly. If we die with a lot of desire nature or a lot of addictions, some people decide to try to stay here on earth because of their addictions. So they'll hang out at those familiar places where they had their habits fed. And if they find other people who are very weakened personalities, they can attach themselves to it. And suddenly they're living out their desire through that body, or at least a shared existence. And it's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. When we realize God, and we realize who and what we really are, we go beyond this body. We realize that we are the Supreme Spirit. Now, this is more than an intellectual acceptance or an acknowledgement that we think, well, I think that's the way that it is. That sounds right to me. That's just a baby step. That's a beginning. And it's the start of a long road, in most cases, for us to really learn who and what we are in spirit. We're very, very addicted to this body, to the senses, to our notion of who we are as a result of having a body and being in this world. It's perhaps we have lived many, many lifetimes. And as a result of that, we come into this world and we adapt to it quite naturally, even though we may not like it at times. Nevertheless, it's very deeply rooted in us. And one might even think, it's hopeless, I'll never be able to get realization. And if it were only dependent on our own efforts, that would likely be the case. But we have a secret weapon. We have grace. And grace is that indwelling presence. It's the perfect aspect of God. Christ consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, Kutastha Chaitanya, as it's called in yoga, is that all-pervasive spirit of God that is, it's like a seed sown into every atom of space. And it's sown into the soul of the human individual. And when it begins to awaken itself, it brings with it a power for transformation. Now, even in the same sense that when you eat some food, you don't have to go through a mental calculation how to digest that food, how to make the stomach muscles to work, how to make the gallbladder to release its digestive juices, all of that. There's so many things that go on beyond our own knowledge or will. They just simply do when everything's functioning properly. How much more is it so when we go to God and get God realization? What would we know to do to make the transformation in this body, in this mind, in this nervous system? So much has to change to accommodate the tremendous power and intelligence that is going to want to express itself through this human form. It's a total makeover of the human body. Where would we start? We begin through prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation. Now, prayer and meditation has very fundamental, good purpose. There's a recent Harvard study. It's a long-term study. I think it was 16 or 18 years. And it measured different families, different individuals. I think there were 5,000 samples, which is a reasonable size for these kind of studies. And it showed there was a 30% higher chance for happiness for children who were raised in families where there was prayer and meditation. And that's very significant statistically. So even just on a human level, having prayer and meditation, if we just teach our children, if nothing else, that God is available to them, that they can talk to God, and that God will talk back to them. Not just when they're in trouble, but if they're lonely, if they're having difficulties of various kinds, they can talk it over to God. And God will speak back to them in the quietness of their own minds. This is a powerful tool for children to have. But it promises much, much more than that as well. It promises this transformation in which we might attune ourselves so completely to the highest spiritual consciousness that we might merge into that, become one with that, know ourselves so completely as that, that the bliss will fill our beings, that the radiant light will be in us and all around us, that love will flow out through our hearts for all creation, that we will be made new, a new body in Christ, a new body in Christ consciousness. And this transformation is absolutely possible in each and every human being. Not all people are interested. They're not awakening yet. But for those of us who are, the promise is there. The potentiality is waiting to be released. So let us really put that intention into our minds. Let us focus upon the one thing that is more important than all the other things. Let us not get waylaid, as Mother used to say, by Mr. In-Between. Psychic phenomenon and all of these things can be interesting. But ultimately, they are all diversions. Because we go further than that. One time somebody asked Papa and said, well, you must know all of my thoughts. And Papa knows, says no such thing. That Ram Dass would have to lower his consciousness to be in that psychic realm where he would know all of somebody's thoughts. And Mother would say that God gave her whatever it was that she needed to work with an individual. And I have found that to be true as well. I don't seek things out. But God will give me things. He'll give me what is needed for that individual. And so we can reside in that childlike trust. Whatever you need, as long as you are actively attuning yourself to God, you will have that. You truly will. And you will have that guidance. It may come as a hunch in the beginning. Well, I think this is the right way to go. And then you try it, and it works out for you. Or perhaps you find out that It was false prophet, so to speak. And it took you in the wrong direction. But you learn from that experience too. And you keep inwardly searching. You keep inwardly asking. And then you get the experience of a true thought from God. And you realize, you recognize how different that was than your own normal thought process. And now that gives you a clue, it gives you a hint as to how that will unfold, what to look for when it is that you're seeking out to do God's will. And one thing you'll notice is that you are calm inside. It's not excitable. And if you're being driven by the senses, it's never calm. It feels like you have to do this thing and it's the only thing that's going to bring you happiness. And it's usually just the opposite. It brings you a lot of pain. And it can never bring you the life that you're truly yearning for. Because what we're yearning for is the bliss of God, Ananda. Ananda is the salve on the soul that makes us know that we are one with the infinite light. Ananda is what lifts us up as on angel's wings and lifts us into that kingdom of heaven. For the kingdom of heaven is to be found within you. That's such a tremendous statement by the Christ. The kingdom of heaven is to be found within you. And yet, who looks for it there? It's almost as if the opposite took hold. And it's everywhere but there. You are a sinner. Now, sin in the original language just meant you missed the mark. You're like an archer who didn't hit the target. Okay. So, string the bow, get the arrow ready, try again, and keep going until you do hit the target. There's so much shame in this world. And it's a shame that there's so much shame. It's not how God created us, nor what He wanted for us. We are all children of God. His mother would say, some are naughty and some are good, but all are His kids. And for us to really feel that way, I am God's child. I try my best. I do my best. Mother said, take try out of your vocabulary. Do it. I do my best to do my best. And if I get it wrong, I learn from my experience. I have the humility to do that. I take a step back, I recollect myself, and I do it again. And I keep doing it until I really get that feeling, this is right. This is correct. This is true for my soul. And when you do, you take a step forward in spiritual advancement. God's grace is absolutely working inside of you. And through that grace, He sees to it that everything happens in your life so that you might realize Him in all of its fullness. This is a great promise, and it's absolutely the truth. May the blessings of God and Christ and Gurus be upon you. May you be lifted up into the bliss of your own being, where you might realize the truth. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. And then you open these eyes and you see nothing but brothers and sisters in God everywhere. It's a beautiful vision. And it's not just some poet. It's not just some writer. It's a truth. It's an absolute reality. And it's something that is so rock solid you can stand on it and it will be unshakable no matter what the world throws at you. So may their blessings ever be with you and lift you into the height of the highest regions of heavenly consciousness. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai.